on the Colorado State Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the Colorado State Insider with the voice of the Rams, Brian Roth.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Colorado State Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Roth. Welcome back to the program. We appreciate you tuning in, wherever you may be tuning in from, and whatever podcast platform. As always, we do invite you to seek out and subscribe to the podcast, even if you found us on csurams.com. That is terrific. But if you get a chance, please subscribe to the podcast. All right, well, we do have a full show coming up here, and of course, we will talk a lot of football, as we normally do. And yes, we'll talk a little bit about what happened in the season opener last Friday night. Rams fall to South Dakota State 42-23. Certainly a disappointing night all around for the team, for the coaching staff, and obviously a fan base that I thought was terrific on Friday night. The students were about as good as it possibly could get. Over 11,000 students were at Campus Stadium, the most ever student turnout, the biggest student turnout, I should say, ever at Canvas Stadium. So kudos to the students. And yeah, we did see some of that exodus as we got into that third quarter, which is always unfortunate. But again, Colorado State was down 21-10 to South Dakota State. And yeah, I know that didn't help the situation. But students were awesome. Fans were awesome. 32,000 fans back at Canvas Stadium. You had the band. You had the cheerleaders, the Golden Palms. I mean, everything felt right, even with the weather delay. That was pretty fun. I mean, to be honest, to watch the students out there in a torrential downpour, then you get the big rainbow over the east stands as we were looking at it from the west press box. I mean, it just set up to be a great night. And obviously, as Steve Adazio would tell you, they didn't get their job done, the coaching staff and the players. And we're going to hear from head coach Steve Adazio here. And I know it was a frustrating evening for everybody. And I had a chance to talk to Steve Monday night on the Coors Light Colorado State Coach Show from CBM Potts Collindale. And, you know, kind of gave him the floor for the opening comment of the night. And I want to play you that comment because Steve got pretty fired up as well. Had a couple days to digest it, and obviously you can hear still some of the frustration in Steve's voice. So we'll play you that. We'll also hear a comment from defensive coordinator Chuck Heater. He joined me on the show Monday night as well from CBM Potts. And, you know, listen, the Rams gave up 240 rushing yards in that game, 7.1 yards per rush. And I think that was maybe the most alarming thing that I saw on Friday night, because that front seven for CSU in the four-game season last year was dynamite. They only gave up 109 rushing yards per game last year, and three of those games were on the road. Colorado State was playing the top teams in the Mountain West Conference last year in those four games. Even though it was a small sample size, it was good competition, and they still were that good against the rush. Well, what went wrong on Friday night in that run game? We'll hear from Chuck Heater, and Chuck pulled no punches either. I mean, very, very honest and forthcoming answers out of Chuck Heater, as you would expect a guy who's been in college football for well over 40 years. Then later on the program, we're going to preview the upcoming opponent with Andrew Allegretti. He's the voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores, and Andrew's going to jump on and talk to us a little bit about the SEC opponent coming in here. And yeah, Colorado State lost to a FCS team here this past week. Yep, so did Vanderbilt. They lost at home to East Tennessee State by the count of 23-3. Vanderbilt has lost 11 games dating back to 2019. And CSU favorite coming up on Saturday night. So we'll talk to Andrew about just what's going on there in Nashville with Vanderbilt, a program that's under new leadership. And then later on in the program, we will sit down with Tom Hilbert, the volleyball coach here at Colorado State. And haven't had a chance to do that yet here on the podcast, so figured this was a good week to do that. Rams sitting at 1-3 in the season. They could easily be 3-1. Of course, they played a tough schedule. Coming off a win against North Carolina State, they dropped a tough five-set match to North Carolina the night before. And it's a Ram volleyball team that is inexperienced, but a Ram volleyball team that Tom Hilbert expects to get better as the season goes along. So we'll hear from head coach Tom Hilbert a little bit later on. But before we get to any of that, coming up on Friday night, we have the Hall of Fame banquet from Canvas Stadium. I'll be emceeing that and really looking forward to it. Always a great night when we get to really honor our past and honor some of the great athletes and individuals that have given so much to Colorado State University. So it's the 30th class that's going to be inducted into the Colorado State Hall of Fame. And, well, one of the people going in on Friday night, it's going to be a real honor to introduce him as Gary Ozello, a longtime friend of mine and a guy who really I consider to be a mentor. I came to Colorado State back in the fall of 2000. That's when I started at CSU, and I was a young radio broadcaster back then. Didn't really know what was going on. Still had a lot to learn back in those days. But, you know, Gary was a sports information director at that point and was one of my first real main contacts at Colorado State. And Gary's been a mentor ever since. So that's going to be a lot of fun to watch Gary go into the Hall of Honor. Then the Hall of Fame, Rich Filler, volleyball coach at Colorado State. Rich set the stage really for this winning volleyball tradition that continues today with Tom Hilbert, who, of course, we'll hear from a little bit later on in the program. Rich was the third volleyball coach ever at Colorado State, posted 299 wins. Debbie Moss, a distance runner, All-American back in 1993, 1994. She's going to be inducted on Friday night. Another runner, Terry Harrison from track and field, finished second at the NCAA championships in the 10K. That was all the way back in 1968. Terry was also invited to the Olympic trials in 1972. Breanne Fuller, a swimmer, one of the best ever at Colorado State, a four-time conference champ, set Mountain West record in 2013 in the 200-yard backstroke. And Fuller finished 23rd nationally in the 100 and 200 backstroke in the 2013 NCAA championships. And then, you know, last but not least, Joel Dreesen. And of course, we all know Joel. 2004 season, he was terrific. Honorable mention, All-American by Sports Illustrated. Two-time first-team All-Mountain West Conference tight end. And of course, had a nice stint in the NFL with the Jets, Texans, and the Broncos. It'll be great to catch up with Joel on Friday night and talk and rehash all of those great memories from the early 2000s. Joel had a great career at Colorado State, and I imagine Sonny Lubick's going to be there on Friday night. I don't know why he wouldn't. Of course, obviously very close with Gary Ozello and Joel Dreesen, and that'd be great if he is, because I haven't seen the old ball coach in a while. It's always great to catch up with Sonny Lubick. All right, let's get to the football game this past week. Again, the Rams fall to South Dakota State. Obviously, it was a disappointing night for everybody, and I don't want to get too deep into the contest, and we are going to move on, but I did want to play the opening comments from head coach Steve Adazio, and this was from Monday night, the Coors Light Steve Adazio radio show, and opened up the questioning asking about the game on Friday night, and you know, Steve was pretty animated in that interview and speaking to the live audience that was at CBM Pots and also to the radio listeners. But you can hear Steve gets pretty fired up in this answer. And I just wanted to play it in its entirety. This is Steve Adazio, his opening answer on the Steve Adazio Coaches Show Monday night.
We didn't play good enough. And that's my responsibility. Because they looked like they were mid-season form and we did not. And that's my job. And so that's on me. And we needed to play at a high level to beat that team. And at times, we did some really good things, but not enough. And, you know, we struggled on defense, and Chuck will talk to you about that a little bit. You know, that's the strength of our team, especially in the front seven.
Right.
And and I know those guys are disappointed and have some adjustments that they're going to make. On offense, I mean, you know, we didn't run the ball the way we can and will run the ball. We threw the hell out of it, you know, and that's why people ask me, you know, to win the game. I mean, that's great. We threw for over 300 yards. The quarterback was over 69% efficient. I mean, we had 400 and almost 70 yards of offense and ran, called 94 plays, ran 89 plays to their 60. We had more first downs. The yardage, I think they had 10 more yards of offense than we did. But at the end of the day, they had explosive plays. And at the end of the day, you got to stop the run, and you got to be able to run it, right? I've said that forever. Well, we didn't stop the run, and we didn't run it. But we did here's the good news. Our quarterback played a great game. And people said, what will he be like? You know, how is he throwing the ball? We hit every third down, third and medium, third and long. We all of our – John will talk about him. We hit all of our goals in the red zone, you know. So that's a plus. I know we can fix the run game part. We have an elite running back, okay? We'll get that fixed. This was up. They were a pretty heavy downhill front team, so it forced us to throw a little probably more. We would have probably took a different approach, balanced it a little bit more. We were 60% throw. I can tell you that's never happened in my career.
Right.
But we were 60 throw, 40 run. So this week we just need to close that gap back up, and we need to run the ball better. Okay.
Right.
And we'll do that. Special teams, we tilted the field really well. I mean, it's our punter, our kicker. I mean, we missed a field goal, but, I mean, you know, a two-minute drill, we executed that, I thought, excellently. So there's positives. And our kids played hard. I mean, I don't think you saw that team not playing hard. But we didn't play clean enough, and we didn't play crisp enough. And we played a really good football team, and we got beat. And now we've got to learn from that game, okay? And in some respects, I'm not trying to make the, you know, whatever, half full. You'd rather win and figure your crap out, okay? But we'll get better from that football game. Had we played a slapper team and kind of pushed them around, which a lot of people do early, you'll cover up those mistakes. And they're going to come back because those mistakes never go away. They come back to you. They came out on us. So from that respect, I think it'll help us this week. Now, I'm not happy about it, but I believe that. That's not like some silver lining stuff. I really actually believe we'll be a better football team because of that. I wish we could have won it and done the same thing, right?
Right.
And that didn't happen. But our kids, you should see the attitude of this football team right now. I mean, they're locked in, and they're ticked off, and they should be.
Yeah.
We all should be.
Yeah.
And so I think we'll have a great week. I think we'll make the necessary adjustments. But, you know, what we're building here is we're trying to build a program. And part of building a program is building the belief and the ability to know you can win. And the toughness and the resiliency to handle these things and still continue to get better. Rome's not built in a day, okay? We're all impatient, starting with me. But we still have work to do and growth to go, and I think we're going to have a chance to have a really great season. And I think this game will help catapult us, even though I know what our schedule is moving forward, right? We got Vandy coming in, they're an SEC team. And Coach Meyer called me a little bit on the way over. He says, hey, just remember, they got SEC. You know what they got. And I said, I know. I mean, they're an SEC team, and we go on the road to Toledo, and we go to Iowa, so it's not for the faint of heart. But we're going to become a better football team, and we're going to win our share of games now. We're going to have a good year. So we just got to keep, you know, keep grinding, man. Keep the faith and keep believing.
All right, head coach Steve Addazio there joining us on Monday night, Coors Light Steve Addazio, coach's show, and obviously taking responsibility for the loss and trying to explain it a little bit. But the bottom line is, it's a Colorado State team that's got to be better than they were this past week. And yeah, hope that we're going to see a better football team coming up on Saturday night when they take on Vandy. Just a few pivotal moments that stick out to me from that South Dakota State game. And I'm not going to get too deep into this, but you know, this was a game that ended up being 42-23, and it was over probably late in the third quarter, a series of events that happened in the third quarter that, man, a few of those things go differently. I mean, Colorado State has a chance to be right there in that football game, and really, you can even look at a few mistakes in that first half as well. I mean, the first mistake that pops out is the bomb to Dante Wright on the second drive of the game. He was wide open, and Centeio just missed him. Didn't miss him by much. I mean, it was close to being a perfect pass, but Wright was so far behind the defense, it didn't have to be a perfect pass. He could have underthrown him by 5 yards, and Wright still might have had a chance to take it to the house. And that one obviously hurt. Would have set the tone for the game. Rams would have been up 7-0. Rams were down 7-0, and CSU was able to put together a 17-play drive, and they would early in the second quarter tie it up at 7. All right, so well, the momentum back in the hands of Colorado State. Rams would kick off, and South Dakota State would have the football, and CSU would force them into a 3rd-and-15 from their own 20-yard line. Rams looking like they might get a 3-and-out after they just tied up the football game. But on 3rd-and-15, South Dakota State picks up the first down. Next thing you know, 8 plays later, they find pay dirt, and all of a sudden, the momentum right back with South Dakota State. It's 14-7. Then at the end of the first half, Rams make it a 14-10 game with a 1:27 to go in the half. CSU, based on everything that had happened in the first half, you say, okay, look, you haven't played well. You're down 14-10 going into halftime. Let's regroup. Well, the Rams with 1:27 to go in the half, South Dakota State with the football, and the Rams let them go right down the field in just 38 seconds. Made it 21-10. Rams missed a field goal to close the half. So it's 21-10 going into the second half. Now, South Dakota State gets the football to open up the second half, and you're thinking to yourself, you got to get a three and out here. There's no way you can give up points on that opening drive of the third quarter for South Dakota State. You can't give up points there. You got to keep it 21-10. Well, CSU comes out. They get a three and out to open up that second half. All right, defense does its job. Well, then Rams get the football, and they had a fourth and one from their own 38-yard line. Steven Adazio rolls the dice, decides to go for it. A call that I didn't necessarily have a problem with. Rams trying to really get the momentum back in this football game, and you knew that first offensive possession was really important for CSU. You can go get points there and make it a 21-17 game. Rams are right back in it, I mean, and with the momentum. But instead, CSU does not get the first down on fourth. And two plays later, Jackrabbit score made it 28-10, and that's when you started to feel the game kind of slipping out of the grasp of Colorado State. But then, really the nail in the coffin, fumbled exchange at midfield with about 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. Rams had it right there at their own 48-yard line. Still a 28-10 game at that point. I mean, it's not over. I mean, 18-point game with 20-plus minutes to go in regulation. That game's not over, but with the fumbled exchange, for all intents and purposes, that game was over. And, you know, it's interesting. Rams lose to an FCS team this past week. Vanderbilt loses to an FCS team this past week. How about number 20, Washington? They lost at home 13-7 to an FCS team in Montana. UConn lost, UNLV lost, Tulsa lost. Those are the six teams that all lost to an FCS team here this past week. And then, boy, there were other games that nearly went the way of FCS teams. I mean, Iowa State barely got past Northern Iowa. Oklahoma State squeaked by Missouri State. Kansas barely beat South Dakota. So there was a lot of FCS teams that played that spring schedule that fared very, very well. And that's only week number one, and already six FCS wins over FBS teams. And unfortunately for the Rams, CSU was one of them. All right, one of the things that I think stuck out to me was the defense, and I think we all thought that defense, especially the front seven, was going to be really the tip of the spear for this Colorado State football team in 2021. And again, the Rams only giving up 109 rushing yards per game last year, and that was fourth best in the nation. Well, in the contest on Friday night against South Dakota State, Rams gave up 240 rushing yards and 7.1 yards per play. It was concerning to Colorado State fans, certainly, but it was concerning to the defensive coordinator, Chuck Heater, as well. And Chuck joined us on the program Monday night, Steve Adazio Coaches Show, and I asked Chuck about that run defense and the overall performance of his unit.
Well, that's extremely disappointing, yeah. You know, and you know, you can and I told the guys the other day, I said, you know, your good players got to play well, you know. And so we as coaches have to ask, then why didn't they? If your best players didn't play their best, why is that? Because they're good dudes. We got good guys. The culture of the program's outstanding with what Steve's done. Guys that want to be good players, but it didn't happen. So what's that about? You know, that goes right back to the coaches. So we're doing some real soul searching in that regard. The kids are not obviously happy about it. They saw the tape. And but, yeah, we were third in the country in average per rush a year ago. And only four games, but they were against pretty good teams.
Yeah.
This team averaged 7 yards per rush, you know. So you got to address that, and our guys have responded, but we're not happy about it. Disappointed as coaches that we didn't do a good enough job, because ultimately, if you got good enough players, you know, which we believe we do, you got a good enough culture because of what the head coach has done, then what is it when you fail? What is that? You know, when your best players don't play, you got some guys you're trying to develop. There's three or four guys that you know are going to have some inconsistencies. You're trying to get them better. You're always battling that. But when five or six of your best guys don't play their best, then you're going to fail. And we failed at an extraordinary level. There's not one measurable, and I'm into statistics, I'm into measurables, things that evaluate your defense. There's not one measurable thing on defense that was positive. Our kids fought and they played hard. That was really, I've got to get who they are. But when you measure defense in terms of run defense and third down defense and red zone defense, turnovers, all those things that count and evaluate your defense, not one thing happened. So that's some serious conversation about, you know, what is and what is not.
All right, so there's Chuck Heater, defensive coordinator at Colorado State. And I like the candor there from Coach Heater. And he was not mincing words. And, you know, you expect that from a coach that has been around this game for as many years as Chuck Heater has, 40 plus, and certainly he knows his defense has to play better coming up on Saturday night. All right, so let's look forward to Saturday night. It's going to be Ag Day coming up, and Rams are going to wear the orange uniforms, new helmets. And in fact, I've been told that all the uniform is different. There's been some changes with the orange out uniforms. Looking forward to seeing that. I think the helmets look absolutely stunning. You'll see them on Saturday night. A lot of you have already seen them on social media when the Rams kind of announced that they were going to go to the new helmets. It was, what, late summer. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I think there's still going to be a big crowd. Despite what happened last week, the crowd's going to come back because it is Ag Day. I think the students are still excited about getting out to Canvas Stadium. And so another opportunity, right? An opportunity to bounce back. And yeah, you lose to an FCS team, but you counteract that with a win over an SEC team. That's going to feel pretty good. And I think we can kind of agree a win on Saturday night can get the season back on track. And it's a very winnable game. It's a CSU football team that's favored. Vegas had that line open up at Rams favored by a point. Immediately, within a day, Colorado State was favored by a touchdown. And say, well, how is that? Rams lose to South Dakota State and you get Vanderbilt coming in out of the SEC. Well, it's been tough times for Vandy of late. They are under new leadership. Clark Lea is their first-year head coach, spent the last 4 years at Notre Dame, last three as their defensive coordinator, had a ton of success, former fullback, former walk-on at Vanderbilt, and trying to rebuild that program after they went 0-9 last year. And in fact, Vanderbilt's going to bring in an 11-game losing skid into Canvas Stadium on Saturday night, and that includes a loss to an FCS team, as we mentioned, just like the Rams this past Saturday night. They lost 23-3 to East Tennessee State University. It was the first SEC school to lose to an FCS team since 2015. Vanderbilt scored the first 3 points in that game. Then it was 23 unanswered by ETSU. Three turnovers in the contest certainly hurt Vanderbilt. They had a fumble that was returned for a touchdown late in the contest. And, you know, East Tennessee State ran for 189 yards, nearly 5 yards a pop in that game. Vanderbilt struggled to run the football. So it's a Vanderbilt team that's going to be coming in limping a bit under new leadership, trying to get the program turned around, and it's a real opportunity for CSU to come out, play much better than you played on Friday night against South Dakota State, get that run game going, get the run defense shored up, get after the quarterback, and I think this is an opportunity for CSU to get a bounce-back win, and then you go into two tough road games with Toledo and Iowa, but you're feeling pretty good about yourself sitting at 1-1 on the season. Well, let's get a closer look at the Commodores of Vanderbilt. And to do that, we welcome in their play-by-play voice. It's Andrew Allegretta. All right, Andrew, appreciate you taking out a couple of minutes to join us here on the podcast this week. And I guess let's just start here. Of course, there's a new head coach, new leadership there at Vanderbilt football. But what were the expectations going into this season? Obviously didn't win a game last year in all SEC play, but returned 17 starters from that team.
You know, I don't say this in the sense to say that they didn't care about this season or this season is being dismissed or anything like that. It's not. There is a deep sense of, and the phrase that Coach Lee will use from time to time is that we're not going to put winning into the distant future. But I don't know that there's a true set of expectations for this year. It is a holistic reset for Vanderbilt football, all the way from, quite frankly, the chancellor's office, all the way down to the football coach, and then beyond from there. It is a wholehearted top to bottom reset for Vanderbilt football. After the struggle from back in 2020, where Derek Mason goes 0-9, it's the first winless season in the history of the program. It's a full-on reboot. So I don't want to say that there's no expectations, but the expectation is to see a genuine turn of some variety, whether that's the turn of the culture and the day-to-day operations, whether that's some genuine moments that you can go back to on the field, whatever it is. We're establishing now here at Vanderbilt the baseline from which it will grow.
What are the challenges of being at a school like Vanderbilt and playing at a football conference like the SEC, where, you know, obviously you have all those blue bloods and all national powers, right? I mean, you have Alabama there that you have to play every few seasons. What are the roadblocks that Vanderbilt has to fight on a year-by-year basis?
You know, I think, and I say this somewhat delicately because this is my first season here at Vanderbilt, but doing plenty of reading and talking to folks, you know, I read one particular line, and I don't want to say this is all encapsulating, but in the local newspaper, someone wrote that over the past several decades, 13 of the 14 schools in the SEC have invested heavily in their football programs, and a 14th hasn't, and the 14th is Vanderbilt. I think there is a level of truth to that. That is part of the reset that we're talking about now. And I'm not trying to shill for Vanderbilt at all necessarily on a Colorado State podcast. I'm just providing context. They've invested $300 million into the program. So when I say that it's a holistic restart, that's what I'm talking about, right? When I say there's not a huge level of expectations for today, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, the roadblocks are certainly from a competition standpoint obvious. This is the most difficult league in the entire country when you've got to go through on a semi-consistent basis Alabama, and certainly on your side of the league Georgia and Florida, and the list goes on, right? Kentucky's awfully good these days, and Tennessee is trying to get it right with Josh Heupel. You know, there are institutional roadblocks that have been difficult over the years. It's not as simplistic to say, oh, it's Vanderbilt, they don't care, you can't get anybody in. But you need cohesion from the chancellor's office to the athletic director's chair. And in this moment in time, Vanderbilt has that, in which it hasn't had it in the past. So when it's always one step forward, two steps back, those sort of have been the things that have happened over the years for Vanderbilt. There's been moments, obviously, James Franklin injected some life into this program. Jay Cutler came out of this program back in the mid 2000s. There have been NFL players that have come and gone, but in terms of established success year in and year out, you need cohesion from one side of campus to the other. And they're looking to establish that now.
All right. Well, I'm curious on how the fan base reacted to Saturday night, and East Tennessee State goes into Nashville, obviously an FCS team. And I know a ball club that Vanderbilt beat up pretty good back in the 2019 season, not expecting to lose that game, but obviously 23-3 East Tennessee State wins it. Given what you were saying about the complete reboot of this Vanderbilt program, what was the fans' reaction? Was it measured? Was it rational? I mean,
which,
a lot of times,
which fans?
That's
the
right.
The ones on Twitter, or the ones that you don't hear from?
Well, the ones you don't hear from are certainly measured and rational, I'm guessing. But I mean, what was the general reaction from the fan base? Because obviously, the Colorado State fan base was certainly up in arms with our loss to South Dakota State. But what was the overall reaction?
So it wasn't great. We can start there. Nor should it be. I don't think the fans should be comfortable with a 23-3 loss to ETSU to start off the season. I think that's fair for them to be frustrated. I think there's also a sense of, I'm not sure if fatalistic is the right word, but when you desire to be engaged with your alma mater, if you're a Vandy football fan or just your team that you root for, and then you try to gear yourself up for a new era, you're hoping to at least get off to a decent start with a win against ETSU, and then you've got UConn around the corner, who obviously just fired their head coach just a couple of days ago. So I don't think anybody, again, expected to make a bowl game necessarily this season, but you're looking for those tangible results, and then you have, you know, your knees cut out from you with ETSU. So I think there's a level of, like, you know, we tried, and then we've been mildly let down again. I think that maybe runs through the fan base, but I think through sobriety, you come back and say, this wasn't the moment for us anyway, right? Like, we weren't, it's not who cares that we lost to ETSU. That would be silly. I think there's a lot of people in that locker room that care deeply that they lost to ETSU, but I think you understand that the building blocks are leading you to somewhere else, not just this first kickoff. I think the ones that have the moment of sobriety come back to that.
Right. Andrew Allegretta, the play-by-play voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores, and the opponent.
And the ones that don't go drink on Broadway real quickly.
That's right. That's right. I'll tell you, we were really upset that we missed that trip to Nashville last year, by the way. We were supposed to be out there. COVID hit. It was one of the games that we had circled on our calendar. I had never been to Nashville, so we're going to hopefully be out there here in a few years and see you guys again. All right, so Let's talk a little personnel, and let's start with the offense and tell Ram fans out there who to look for coming up on Saturday night. And I guess I'll start here. Will we see two quarterbacks again playing for the Commodores this week?
It's a good question. Certainly Ken Seals is the starting quarterback. He was named the starting quarterback last week. I don't expect that to change. He is the definition of a, I don't want to say he's the definition of, but he's a throw first quarterback. And I understand that you guys last season had a little bit of that split with Centeio, who's been the starting quarterback so far this season. So it might look a little bit familiar between Ken Seals and Mike Wright. Mike did get a little bit banged up against ETSU. His status, I would expect him to play to the level with which he plays. I don't know. That's a good question. Once you get past the quarterbacks, it's funny going through the rosters because I feel like we're about to have a Temple spring game or perhaps a Boston College spring game out here with the number of transfers from those two schools. it's going to be on the Vanderbilt side. You'll have from Temple Ray Davis, the running back. I would pay attention to him. I think all of the guys that transferred from Temple for Colorado State understand what sort of running back he is. He didn't have a huge game against ETSU. I think he had about 50 or 60 yards on the grounds, and I think he averaged about 3.5-4 yards per carry. But he played great at Temple a couple of years ago, and when he hit the hole effectively against ETSU, he's got pop and strength, and he can break a run. So I would pay attention to him. He wears number 6 for Vanderbilt. And then in terms of receivers, you know, Cam Johnson is the guy coming into the season. I think he led all Power 5 receivers in receptions toward the back end of the 2020 season. However, the name that got the most targets last week against ETSU was Will Shepard. He is a bit of a do-everything wide receiver. He probably plays a little bit more on the outside and kind of can take the top off the defense, but he's tall, he's lanky. He's a young wide receiver from just outside of New Orleans. And I think that would be the name to pay attention to from the receiving core.
All right. How about the other side of the football? 8 starters returning from that defense last year that at times looked like they played well. Obviously, only gave up the one touchdown this past week against ETSU. Probably too many rushing yards for their liking. But tell us a little bit about this Vandy defense.
I thought the defense played okay against ETSU. Certainly not well enough to win. There was a couple of critical moments in which they just busted and they couldn't contain ETSU's running back Quay Holmes, who's quite frankly a very good running back. I think he probably starts at a lot of programs across the country. There was a 3rd and 14, and Quay Holmes rushed for 19 yards and they turned it into a touchdown. So there was a few moments like that weren't great. Throughout the course of camp, I would say we talked a lot about the defensive line. I don't think that will change. Whether Davian Davis, who wears number 9, he's one of the captains for this team. I think he can put some pressure. There's Elijah McAllister. He plays what's called the star position. It's kind of one of those hybrid edge rushers slash can drop back into coverage sort of stuff. He's one of the captains. I'll tell you a name that I like that I thought got into the backfield and was a sure tackler a couple of times is number 90, Nate Clifton. I think the line is solid. I think whether it's you guys, whether it's Georgia down the road, all of that stuff is going to really test them and their depth and their endurance and all of that sort of stuff. But I think the defensive line throughout the course of the season, we'll see, can do enough damage to disrupt a few things against opponents.
Andrew, appreciate it. Thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing you out here in Fort Collins. Great to get an SEC team back to Fort Collins. Like I said, we were looking forward to getting out to Nashville last year. Didn't happen, but great to get an SEC team here. And looking forward to a football game. I know both of these programs are looking at saying, hey, we got to go get this one. And certainly I know the Rams are hoping to do that. And so is VU. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate you.
You're very welcome. We'll try to not duplicate what Arkansas did a couple of years ago in your place. How's that?
No, that's I think Ram fans would appreciate you guys duplicating that, but I know you do not want any part of that. Andrew, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
All the best.
All right, a big thank you to Andrew there for taking a couple of moments joining us here on the program to talk about Vanderbilt. Again, Ag Day coming up on Saturday night, 8 p.m. is the kickoff from K Canvas Stadium. The weather should be fabulous. Highs that day are going to be in the upper 80s, and well, it should be a fun football getting an SEC team coming in here again. 8 p.m. kickoff. Our pregame tailgate show begins at 6 p.m. across the Colorado State Radio Network coming up on Saturday night. All right, we're going to close out the podcast here this week talking a little Colorado State volleyball, and that's a Ram volleyball program that really has been the gold standard of any athletic program at Colorado State over the last 15 years. And the man leading the program, Tom Hilbert, going to join us here in just a moment. Tom, this past week, picking up career win number 600, if you can believe that. We'll talk to Tom about that. Rams got the win over North Carolina State, a four-set win, and it was just the first match win of the season for CSU, if you can believe that, sitting at 1-3, but it's a Ram volleyball team that really, for all intents and purposes, could be 3-1 on the season. Rams won a tough one at UNC against a very good UNC team here this year. In fact, it's a UNC team that can win the Big Sky Championship this year. And, you know, CSU dropped a top five setter to North Carolina just last week, and a tough match with Northwestern, the whiteout a week and a half ago when Colorado State packed Moby with nearly 6,000 fans. The student section was awesome in that opener. And CSU hoping to keep it rolling a little bit coming up this week. They have two matches on Friday, a match on Saturday as well, including an orange out on Friday night against Oregon State. The Rams went 9-6 last season in that shortened spring exhibition season. They had 8 newcomers last year, 3 more newcomers here this year. So Tom Hilbert and his coaching staff still trying to get the pieces to fit. All right, here's my conversation earlier this week with head coach Tom Hilbert. All right, Tom, well, good to finally sit down with you here this fall, and you guys are 4 matches in, and well, picked up the first win of the season here this past weekend in North Carolina State, and happened to be win number 600 for you, so congratulations. And I know you're more concerned with the overall team record here this season and where the trajectory of the year is, but did you get a chance to sit back and kind of reflect on that milestone of 600?
I suppose I did. You know, Pete, other people make a lot bigger deal of a number than I do. To me, the most important number is when you're done, you know? Yeah. And so I'm, you know, I felt, yeah, it's great because a lot of people reached out to me and I like to connect with people, but we're on to the next, you know, possible 601.
All right, well, does this season feel normal? I mean, you had to go through last season. You guys played in the spring, as a lot of the fall sports did in the COVID season last year. You didn't get a fall camp last summer. You had 8 newcomers. Here this time around, I mean, does it finally feel like you're back to normal?
Well, yes. The season, the demands of the season, the way it's scheduled, all that feels like we're back to normal. I think that it's really interesting to look out across my practice gym every day and realize how many of these kids, their very first Moby Arena match was, you know, a week ago,
right.
Saturday against right. Northwestern. I mean, it's really crazy to think about that and how much we missed in terms of an off-season scrimmage sessions and then the whole fall of 2020. And then we got 16 matches in the spring of 21, which is kind of like having an off-season. Mm-hmm. And now we're back into the same, you know, run of the show that we've been in for the past 20-some years. And it does feel like it's the same, but it still feels like it's very new to a lot of people.
You and I were just having the conversation before we hit the record button here about the fact you had 8 newcomers last year, and again, they didn't get a camp. They only got a 16-match schedule, conference only, didn't get the Moby Arena experience. Then you get 3 newcomers in here and said, well, are you young or maybe not young, or you just inexperienced? What are you?
I think we're inexperienced. I think we have a few older players on the team. We've got a really good senior libero. You know, our setter's in her fourth year. But they just haven't played a whole lot of matches. And so as we go out so far this year in these first 4 matches, we're learning a lot about ourselves that we didn't know, you know. And even though we've had players on, you know, some of these players have played for 4 years. So we have to go out and go to battle and have matches like we had at North Carolina and have matches like we had at Northern Colorado, where, you know, you're grinding until the end and you're keeping it close and you win at the end. And those are good experiences for players and for teams. They need to go through that. And we had, you know, a team in 2019 that if we were struggling like this, it would have really freaked them out. Mm-hmm. And these guys are just going day by day and trying to win the next one.
All right, I want to go back to that wideout the Saturday against Northwestern that you brought up a moment ago. What was that like for you? I mean, you've coached so many matches here at Moby Arena. You've had these huge crowds and these big matches with big programs. But did it make me feel a little different because, you didn't get that for a whole year. The student section was fabulous. I mean, nearly 6,000 fans in Moby Arena.
Yeah, it was very, very special, and it hit me, you know, it hit me when we walked back into the gym after the set two break, because I came in and the music was blasting and the students are having a great time and the DJ's going and kids are clapping, and it felt like here we are, where athletics is back, you know what I mean? Right. And it had been so different the year before, and so it was very, very special at that moment for me. I didn't feel it going into the match, but I felt it at that moment.
All right, Colorado State sitting at 1-3 on the season, coming off a win against North Carolina State. And Tom, we were just talking. I mean, it really feels like you guys could almost be 3-1 at this point. And you talked about closing out matches. Obviously, weren't able to do that against North Carolina, and not able to do it against a Northern Colorado team that you got up early on.
Yeah, I know. And those are lessons learned, you know. And I tell my team this. I told them this. I said, we are one bounce, one block, one kill away from being 3-1 and feeling ecstatic about our season. And that was after the North Carolina loss. Mm-hmm. And we lose that match by 2 points in the fifth set. And I'm like, one bounce would change the way you feel right now. So it's not about how you played. It's how you played in the last part of the set.
Right.
You know, let's continue to try to learn to do it. And I think they played with great resilience and really great determination at end game against North Carolina State, who was also a very good team. So I think we're learning. I think they understand they need to be aggressive in those moments, not tentative. And I think that when we're faced with them again, we're going to do a good job with it.
All right, talk to us a little bit about personnel. You're starting to figure out a little bit of who kind of fits where, what the rotations are like. You know, a kid like Kennedy Stanford comes in last year. It looks like she's been very good for you on the outside. Annie Solomon's a newcomer from High Point. It looks like Sasha Colombo is kind of settled in that middle blocker spot. Talk a little bit about some of the personnel early in the season.
Well, I think I'm going to talk about the outside hitters first, because those are they're new kids and they have a very important role. And Annie Sullivan, to me, grew up a lot, and she had really great hitting numbers in her conference last year. And she's a kid that is really knows how to use her length. She is a long-armed, tall kid that can hit the ball very hard, and she doesn't always look pretty doing it, but she is very effective, and she continues to battle and fight. And you look out there on the court, and she's got this look on her face like she's exhausted, and she just keeps swinging. And she doesn't hit it out of bounds. You know what I mean? And it's like I really saw her this last weekend in the North Carolina trip. I realized what kind of a player she is and will be for us, and I was very pleased. Kennedy Stanford, great athlete, super jumpy, not tall, but springy, has shots. She just needs to stay aggressive all the time, and she's got great, great talent. Our middles are Sasha Colombo and Karina Lieber. They're still learning. They're good at attacking the ball right now. We got to be a better blocking team.
Right.
And this is our biggest thing right now, is we're giving up a really high hitting efficiency to our opponents. So it's kind of like, I don't know what you'd compare it to, like a run-and-gun basketball team who doesn't play a lot of defense. But, you know, we need to play better defense. We need to block. And it is about – blocking sets up your backcourt defense.
Right.
And if we can improve in blocking, we can be pretty good, because I think the offensive part we're starting to figure out. Jackie Van Lieft has been on the right side. She also hits well from the left side. I'm going to talk about a kid we have named Malaya Jones. She's a transfer from USC. She's not eligible to play yet, and may not be this year. It just depends on whether we get an NCAA waiver on her. But she is a very talented kid that literally can play any position. So, you know, we'd like to get her involved. We've got two very talented freshmen who we need to redshirt, because we got to get them out of that giant lump of players right there at the sophomore year. So, you know, we've got all these roster management kind of challenges that we have to continue to work on.
All right, well, let's look forward. You guys have SIUE here on Friday afternoon. And then Friday night, I mean, Oregon State's coming into town. That's going to be an orange out Pac-12 opponent. It's always a good opportunity. Not necessarily looking at just this weekend, but moving forward, do you like the trajectory of this team? Do you think this team has an opportunity to go out there and compete for a Mountain West Conference championship?
Well, absolutely we do. You know, the biggest barrier in the Mountain West is UNLV.
Right.
But then you've got three or four other teams that, you know, those are teams that, like, I think we can beat them in Moby Arena. How will we do against them in their gyms, you know? So it's the conference is really interesting. New Mexico's undefeated. Last year they were, like, last, you know? So I really feel like the league's in a position where we can go out and be competitive. But when it comes down to it now, the AQ comes from the Mountain West tournament, which we will have for the first time since 2011. And that is going to be really important. So what does that mean? That means all of these matches leading up to this, yeah, we want to win as many as we can, but we want to win that tournament.
Right. All right, Tom. Well, I know you wish you were 3-1, not 1-3, but there's still a lot of the season to go. So best of luck coming up on Friday. And again, congratulations on win number 600.
Thank you very much, Brian.
All right, there's CSU volleyball coach Tom Hilbert, win number 600 this past weekend against North Carolina State. What a career. And the Ram volleyball team, despite their inexperience, I think you're going to see them get better and better as the year goes on. UNLV is the team to beat, as you just heard Tom say, in the Mountain West Conference, the defending conference champions. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Colorado State Insider Podcast. We heard from head coach Steve Addazio, defensive coordinator Chuck Keeter. A big thanks to the voice of Vanderbilt, Andrew Allegretta. And then, of course, a big thank you there to Tom Hilbert. Don't forget, coming up Saturday night, Rams and the Commodores of Vanderbilt, an 8 p.m. Ag Day kickoff from Canvas Stadium. Hope to see you all out there. For everybody that helps put on this podcast, Brian Roth saying so long. Thanks for tuning in to the Colorado State Insider Podcast.
This has been the Colorado State Insider with Brian Roth. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Colorado State Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.